Welcome back to the Real Talk with Dana podcast, where we talk all things nutrition, health, fitness, and mindset with a healthy side of sarcasm. I'm your host, Dana Montes of Real Food with Dana. I'm a nutritionist and body image coach, teaching women how to heal their relationship with food and their bodies, ditch the diet cycle for good, and truly thrive with real food, one delicious meal at a time. All right, guys, we are back. So if you listened to last week's episode number 58, which is Are You Ready for an Elimination Diet with Christina Hoyt Alvarez, she is back again for a second part. From last time when we talked about the different types of elimination protocols and the way they are actually designed versus how they are used in practice, this time we're going to be talking about the importance of working with a trained professional if you're going to do one of these diets, the dangers and negative side effects of elimination diets and therapeutic protocols, and how you can fall into the all or nothing mentality of yes and no foods lists of either consciously or subconsciously attaching morality to these foods, which is made even worse because if you're following them for, let's say, a therapeutic or medical or autoimmune reason, you might actually start to fear these foods that you're eliminating as something that is going to cause physical harm to your body if you eat them, even though the protocol that you're following might not necessarily be the best thing for you. Christina and I are also going to talk about our personal experience, because we both have celiac, of doing the autoimmune protocol and doing different kinds of therapeutic healing protocols, and the times when we use them in a more, I guess you could say, positive or productive light versus the time when we realized that we were actually using them, really just abusing them to try and go after weight loss rather than just healing our symptoms. Like for medical conditions, for autoimmune conditions, we have the autoimmune protocol, we have the SIBO diet, we have the GAPS diet, you know, all these other things which are designed specifically for healing. But yeah. Then, like for example, the Whole 30 is designed as an elimination diet, and like paleo or keto or vegan or whatever these things like technically could be elimination diets.
Yeah. They fall into this because there's science to back up why it works.
Right.
Blah, 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 blah,
yeah,
blah.
Yeah, exactly. But then I think the difference there is like one side, like the autoimmune and all that kind of stuff, those are created with the intent of healing and most of the time are used in practice with the intent of healing, right? Like people that do an autoimmune protocol, they're doing it because they have an autoimmune disease, you know, for the 90% most part. But then on the other side, like these other, you know, keto and paleo and vegan, vegetarian, Whole 30, all these other things, like, sure, those can be used very therapeutically if you have
keto sensitivities. Keto absolutely can.
Right, exactly.
It's good for epileptics and
exactly.
Cancer patients.
But then in practice, like in reality, how they're being used is just for weight loss. Even if people are saying, oh, I just want to figure out my food sensitivities, you just want to lose weight, you know?
Yeah.
And I think, sure, a lot of these things are designed with a therapeutic end, but in like intent versus like use or whatever. I don't know what word I want to say there.
Well, I'm going to tell you really quickly that even the autoimmune protocol, I feel like, can be abused.
Exactly.
Because, quite frankly, I am guilty of that.
Yeah, exactly.
I did the autoimmune protocol because I have an autoimmune disease, so I figured this is where I need to start, right? And then I had anxiety, and I was like, I had secondary hypothyroidism potentially because I was stressed out the wazoo. And this is when I realized that it was being abused and that I was like, wow, I'm doing this for the wrong reasons. So I started AIP, maybe 6 months before our wedding. And I kept saying, I'm not doing this to lose weight for the wedding. I'm not doing this to lose weight for the wedding. And then slowly when I didn't lose weight, I was like, why aren't I losing weight? And I'm like, whoa, I'm doing this for the wrong reason. And I couldn't stick with it. And then I would binge ice cream and I was like, this is insane. And that's really was my like come to Jesus moment with stepping away from them.
Mm-hmm. Even though a lot of these things are designed with a therapeutic use in mind, no matter what the design of them is, all of them can be abused and then create these patterns that we've been talking about of falling into the all or nothing mentality of the yes, no foods list. And I think that that becomes even worse or like more harsh with the programs that are designed with a therapeutic use in mind. Because like for the autoimmune protocol, for example, we know that in certain conditions like rheumatoid arthritis, like removing nightshades can be super helpful. But that doesn't mean that someone with hypothyroid or some other kind of autoimmune disease or like celiac, for example, like celiac, you have to be off gluten. But that doesn't mean that you have to eliminate all of the nuts and seeds and eggs and nightshades that are taken out with the autoimmune
protocol. But potentially corn,
right? But potentially other things. So it's like, I think then when people do those, especially if they have an autoimmune disease, there then becomes a fear of the no foods because they know that for other people with autoimmune disease, these things can be very harmful or they can cause inflammation. But that doesn't mean that every person who has an autoimmune disease needs to avoid forever or even for a long period of time every food that is on the autoimmune protocol.
Part of the thing, too, that I've noticed that I'd like to touch on, the difficulty that I noticed for getting people off of them.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to be on low FODMAPs forever.
Yeah.
In fact, the research shows it's only supposed to be for a short period of time.
Yeah, and it can actually be detrimental to be on it for a long time.
Talk about your autoimmune center not getting fed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like... if you're on low FODMAPs for a long period of time, you're not getting any of your colon bacteria fed mm-hmm. at any point. We've talked about this before, but that's one thing that I noticed is as I was in practice, I had clients who were losing weight, feeling great about it, feeling good. And that it was working, like AIP was working for them. They were feeling really great. They lost some weight. Maybe it was inflammatory weight, maybe not, I don't know, but they lost weight. And then trying to get them off of the elimination protocol was next to impossible. And you're not supposed to be on it forever.
Yeah,
I just don't believe that you can't possibly be allergic to all of those foods.
Oh yeah, forever.
That is something else is going on. Maybe it takes longer to heal, but it's not forever. And the truth is people get attached to the weight loss.
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, that's what I was going to say is like one of the main driving forces behind not being able to get off is if they do one of these protocols, and even if it's with the intent of healing inflammation and reduction of symptoms and all that kind of stuff, if they do see weight loss and weight loss in the past has been a goal for them, then they don't want to stop because they don't want to gain the weight back, and they're afraid that the foods that they cut out were the reason that they lost weight. So why would they want to add those back in?
Oh my God. Yeah. And I just had this epiphany. I think part of it too is that they become attached to the weight loss, and then they feel as though if they start incorporating new foods back in, that it's not working because they're gaining weight.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the point. Their set point is different. They just had this massive drop because they removed so much inflammation, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the foods that they're incorporating back in are causing inflammation or that their new weight gain is inflammatory.
Unhealthy.
Yeah. Or is unhealthy. I think that's what ends up happening. It's like this mental thought process that happens.
Because
I'm thinking of one client in particular where I saw this happen.
Yeah, because people assume if gaining weight is a symptom, they assume, oh, it must be inflammation. I must be doing something wrong. Like, this is bad. I must be less healthy than I was before I gained weight. But the weight is not the problem. You know, it's whatever underlying conditions you have going on, whether that's physical or whether that's mental, emotional. And I mean, like at the root of like everything that we're doing now is people are afraid of gaining weight, and there is a stigma around gaining weight that it is not healthy, and that in some circles it means that there's inflammation going on, that there's or there's something bad going on. Which is interesting because if you look at like all of the clients that I've ever worked with, like myself included, like I had to gain weight in order to regain my health, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people don't think of it that way because a lot of people have been restricting and dieting for so long. So their, you know, quote unquote, set point is much lower than maybe it would be if they were actually healthy. Coming from someone who has abused many different healing and therapeutic diets, it is very possible to do that if you have a history of any kind of, even if we don't call it disordered eating, if you have a history of, you know, doing really well with an all or nothing mentality, let's just leave it at that. Right? Mm-hmm. Not even using the term eating disorder, not even using the term disordered eating or controlling your food. If you do really, really well with yes, no foods and the black and white and an all or nothing mentality and rules, but you really struggle with the gray area, you need to work with someone if you're going to do a therapeutic elimination diet so that you don't fall into these patterns or exacerbate these patterns that you've already had for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
Ooh, amen, well. Sister.
Well, something else I think we haven't quite touched on that I want to go back to about whether or not you're ready for an elimination protocol. Because like you said, okay, so you did all these protocols all at once, which in theory sound like, oh, I'm going to rock this.
Right?
Like
fix everything.
I'm going to fix all this because, you know, all is better than just one of them, right? Like doing all of the things all at once is better than doing just one. I think something that I have that happened a lot that I see happen with a lot of my clients is that they embark on an elimination protocol without having the foundation already set up so that you can have a natural progression of an elimination. So what happens a lot of times when I used to and guilty would subscribe some of my clients into doing an elimination protocol really early on without thinking about these things. And this is, I learned this the hard way. And some of my clients unfortunately learned with me, you know, that's the reality. What I found was happening, and I think this goes back to getting off of them, and like how did you get off of all three of those? You know, that took years for you to get off of them and not have to do them anymore.
Actually, you know what's funny is, speaking of an all or nothing mentality, do you remember how I got off of those? I went on a trip to Las Vegas with my girlfriends. And I mean, talk about all or nothing. Like for 3 months, I had been restricting myself with food, like not able to go out or anything, had all this like anxiety and stuff. And then I literally went to Las Vegas with my girlfriends. And it, not to say that like I ate and drank everything when I was there, because I knew I was, because I was terrified of it. So I remember my friends still make fun of it. For this to this day, and this is what, almost 6 years ago. So we had gotten back from going out and dancing at this club, and there was great music and everything, and we get back at, you know, like 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning or something, and all my friends are eating like, you know, your typical drunk food. Do you know what I ate? Canned tuna.
What?
Because because I was so neurotic that I was afraid of eating any of these foods. So like during the day I was trying to incorporate more stuff, but I was still afraid of eating garlic, which makes eating out at restaurants almost impossible. And like I wasn't eating any gluten or dairy or sugar any of these things. Like I started to kind of relax the rules a little bit for a couple of days, and then all bets were off. I was like, I don't feel any better after eliminating these things for 3 months, so like F it, I don't care, I'm just gonna do, you know, everything at the same time. And then, of course, I felt worse, you know, so that's why I need to work with someone. So don't be like me, basically. But yeah, you're right. You need a plan that is from the beginning setting you up for success so that you don't become a Dana and go to Vegas.
And also, you need to have the foundation to go back to. So too, is that the elimination protocols are so drastically different than the way that they're currently eating. And that's another thing too to look at when you say, what are my current eating patterns? How are you going to then eliminate all these things if the majority of your diet consists of gluten and then all of a sudden you're removing gluten? How do you have the foundation to go back to and to work through that? You have to set yourself up. Like, I feel like there has to be months of preparation to getting the food patterns and eating patterns in a way that is going to make doing an elimination very strategic and a lot easier to implement. And to go back to, because you already have this foundation already set up. Because a lot of the times is that you're kind of like working towards, or the idea I think that a lot of times I see happening is if you just start incorporating more nutrient dense foods at each of your meals, a lot of your symptoms kind of go away, and then you can be more specific on your eliminations, on like what you're doing. But when you're going like all in, like, doing, hardcore AIP FODMAPs, and what was the third one? There was a whole third
12:30.
meal all the same. First of all, aren't those all like, I don't even want to know. Like, that's intense. Like, I don't even want to know all the foods. Like,
There
what
were
were you
barely
eating?
any foods that I could eat. It
Were you
was
eating red meat and like
no, because I had low stomach
spinach?
acid, so that I couldn't digest red meat. So it was
Canned,
basically
were you
like,
canned tuna and celery?
well, I hate celery, so not celery, but yes.
That's true. So you're having, yeah, that's intense.
Yeah.
So you're doing this, but then at the same time, how are you gonna, you're supposed to naturally and progressively get off of an elimination diet, not go to Vegas.
Oh my gosh, no.
But to
Do
be
not
honest,
recommend.
in all fairness, in all reality, going to Vegas was the best thing you could have done for your health at the time, and to say F it and just eat all the things, I bet that was the best thing you could have ever done. I
But you know
don't
what the problem was is
say it,
like I So even when I did that and was just, like throw my hands up, whatever, I'm gonna do all of this, I was still in this cycle. So like, what do you think I did when I got back? I just went
got
on
right
another
back to
one,
doing. Yeah.
and it's because I wasn't working with enough practitioners who helped me see what patterns that I was going through to help me actually get out of it. And I mean, one thing that we also haven't really touched on yet is like a lot of people get completely obsessed with food while they are doing an elimination diet or a Whole30 or whatever it is. So, how can we help people get out of being so obsessed with food?
Oh,
Yeah, I know that's a
yeah.
big one. We need like six podcast episodes for this, but briefly.
Call it a no rules, rules
Okay.
approach. And that's how I look at it. And that's what saved me from being in that type of pattern. And I see it with my clients too. I think in the past, some of the things that I hear from my clients the most is when I ask them, like, what were you surprised when we worked together? Was how much more food they were incorporating into their diet than the removal of food. Even when I had clients who had diagnoses for like chronic illness, a lot of times they tell me how surprised they were by how much food got incorporated into their diet and how like they got introduced to new types of ways of eating. And I think for me, the first step in getting out of this pattern and having this level of like, I guess where you could Google it, or if you were to like look it up, it'd be more intuitive eating is what where you like end up, right? If you have to put a label on it, which I hate the labels, but if you have to put a label on it, I guess it would fall into intuitive eating. And that is, to me, I was just having this conversation with a client of mine. It was our last session. And we were kind of talking about like she's like, where do I go from here? Like, now that I have this foundation with you and I have this, I know that there's still more work to be done. Where do I go from here? And the way that I look at it from how you incorporate this type of relationship moving forward is by having a no rules rules approach, where therefore, if you have ice cream, you don't feel like you have to eat all of it because it's not allowed to be there tomorrow. Right? Like, it's not allowed to be there if you're on this pattern all the time, then these certain foods, they're not supposed to be in the house. Oh, I have to get rid of them immediately. And I think that leads to the kind of like the binging type behavior, which, we're not getting into. But The first thing I do is no rules, rules. Whereas, sure, you can eat that. And sometimes some of my clients will feel like that in and of itself is so liberating that between our first and our second session, they'll say, I went a little wild. Like, I followed the no rules, rules thing, and I ate a lot of foods that I haven't allowed myself to eat in a really long time. And they'll come back to me and say, I had pizza like every day, like, I did all these things. But then naturally, what ends up happening is that they'll end up saying to me, I'm ready to now learn about nutrient dense foods. And at the same time, allowing those foods to remain in my life. Since you have this no rules, rules approach, you can say, you know, the same way that you can crave a pizza, you can also crave broccoli. I've done it. Like, maybe I'm a weirdo, but sometimes I crave roasted Brussels sprouts. Like, it happens, you know, especially after, you know, I go away somewhere or something. And I think, that to me is kind of how you end up kind of getting off of that, is having this no rules approach. And what allows to have happen is that you finally can hear what your body is actually asking for in each instance. And you can really start to get a relationship that I call it this reciprocal relationship between the body and food, where you're learning the language of your body. And each person has its own language, and their body is telling them different things. I can now identify when I've had too much coffee, and I can say, ooh, that was a little too much caffeine. And I can say, I need some more water today. You know, and it's not anything saying, I have to cut out coffee, I have adrenal fatigue. God, like it doesn't have to be so catastrophic. Instead, it's more to me the goal in mind and where I've ended up and where I want all my clients to end up is for them to say, ooh, that pizza was delicious. And then say to themselves, like later, oh yeah, I want some more pizza. That's cool. Like I'm gonna eat some more. Or, you know, like a day or two later, you can say, ooh, you know, it would be really good. Roasted vegetables with some salmon that I saw Ina Garten's recipe. Like that sounds delish, you know, and to listen to that type of rhythm and understanding what your body kind of is asking for on the day to day. And I do not believe that you can get to that space with your body and be doing elimination protocols at the same time.
And still having rules.
And still having rules. And that's the point, is that the elimination protocol still has rules. And if the end goal is to be able to live in the real world and be able to go out with your friends and enjoy your life
And
and
not feel guilty afterwards.
not feel guilty and not feel controlled by food. And that's the thing too, is like in so many ways you feel so controlled by food. Then you have to get to the point where you are having this no rules, rules approach where anything is allowed. Therefore, there's no morality around food. You're not bad because you had 4 cups of coffee. You're jacked up because you had
You
four cups
probably
of coffee.
don't feel great, but
You might have heart palpitations,
yeah, or like be
but you're
poop in
not,
your pants.
yeah, but you're not a bad person for doing that. And you don't have a massive adrenal fatigue as a result. I think that's the end in mind.
Yeah, learning to actually be able to listen to what your body is saying instead of continually fighting those cycles by telling them or those signals, I mean, not cycles, by continually telling your body, these are the only foods that you're allowed to eat, and these are the ones you're not allowed to eat. Because we know that the reason that this no rules, rules approach works is because as soon as you tell your body you can't have something, that's all it wants. And we
Oh, yeah.
know that more restriction always leads to a binge or going off the walls or whatever it is. And this is why elimination diets or yes, no foods lists or whatever they are, this is why they always inevitably lead to a falling off. And then if you've had this pattern for a long time, this is where the guilt and the shame and the overcompensation kicks in. And then all of that, because it's then even more restriction, just puts you further entrenched in this cycle. So by getting rid of those rules, you'll eventually get to a place where you can listen to your body's very different signals. And I think one really important thing to note, like you were talking about with your clients, is, you know, when between the first and second sessions, they, you know, they eat all the pizza or they let go of the food rules and they just eat all the things that they used to be restricting. That can be a really scary thing for people because they feel like they are losing control, when really you're trying to give up the control. And that phase, I think, is almost a necessary thing that people have to go through in order to truly convince your body and your mind that you're no longer going to be restricting. Because one thing that I talk about with a lot of my clients is it's not only past restriction, which is fueling the binging or the eating all the things. It's also the threat of future restriction, right? Like if you're thinking today, I'm not going to have any more rules around food, and then tomorrow you eat all the things. But in the back of your mind, if you're like, ooh, this is too much, like I need to pull back tomorrow, your body will tell you to keep eating that stuff because it thinks that you're lying to it. You know, it doesn't believe you, especially if you've been restricting for a long time. It does not believe you that tomorrow or next week or whenever it is, or, you know, January, we're in January right now. It doesn't believe that you're actually going to stop restricting, which is why this eat all the things period can happen for some people it's a day, for some people it's a couple of days, for some people it's a week or two. And it can be really scary because you feel like you're losing control. But really, the giving up the control and giving up the rules is the answer to be able to start truly listening to your body and getting out of this cycle.
Mm-hmm. Amen. And I think that people hold on to the rules because it feels so safe.
It's a comfort zone.
Yeah, and it's easy, and because especially with the messaging that we have going on, that we're supposed to be, if we're not following some kind of set of guidelines or rules, then we're out of control. Mm-hmm. That's like the messaging that we have basically like culturally across the board, right? If you're not working a 9-to-5 job, what are you doing? You know, like, if you're not doing, you know, if you're not following a set of rules around the way that you eat, then you must be out of control. If you're not following a set of rules about what time you go to bed every day, then you're living in like this world alternate reality, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or
it doesn't just,
out of control can also be interpreted for people then as failure. And that's when the guilt and the shame creeps back in.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, it's myself in the eyeball.
Oh my gosh, that is kind of what it feels like. I mean, it's hard, especially because it's January now, right? And it's hard and it's almost revolutionary to decide on the one hand and to say openly, publicly, that I'm not going to do this bullshit anymore. You know, yeah. I'm not going to do these elimination diets. I'm not going to make these resolutions around trying to make myself smaller in January, whether that's through food or exercise or water or detoxes or, you know, whatever it is. It's kind of crazy that in order to try and break these patterns, you have to go against the norm to just be like normal again, you know, mm-hmm. to have a non-complicated Facebook status with food and exercise, basically. You know, I was...
it's complicated.
I was talking to one of my clients yesterday. Well, it's true.
It is so true.
And she was saying how it's so amazing for her to watch her 7-year-old daughter because she just eats when she's hungry. She'll go out and play. She'll come in and have a slice of pizza or sometimes not even the whole slice. And then she'll go out and play some more. And then she'll come back in and eat a little bit more. And, you know, there's no, like, food doesn't have a control over her. Exercise doesn't have a control over her. Because at that stage, before people become inundated with all these different crazy messages and we should be doing this and we should be doing that, or you're a failure, you know, or you have no control over yourself around food, so you need to follow this diet. Before they see all of that messaging and experience it, they're truly just eating intuitively. And the way we are designed biologically to eat as humans. And it's kind of a shame that it's so hard. Like, we've become so warped with all of the mixed media messaging and hyperpalatable foods and social media and like unrealistic expectations of bodies and aesthetics and work and sleep and all these other things, that it's so hard to get back to what we were when we were kids.
Oh my God. Yeah. And I see it with my infant too. She eats on demand, and that's how I feed her. I feed her
like,
on demand.
Boob, I'm ready.
Yep. Booby, bring it. You know, it's like, but that's how it is. And she knows when she's hungry and when she's satisfied, and when she's satisfied, she pulls away. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of amazing that we have this innate, you know, mechanism, and we have it in us. We have an innate mechanism in our body that tells us when and when we're not hungry. It's called crinoline. Mm-hmm. So the hormone. So like, it's pretty amazing that we have this ability to tap into that, and that it's innate and it's built into our structure, which leads you to believe that the only reason when we deviate away from that is from outside sources telling us that we have to deviate from that. But it's in us, it's there. And all we have to do is kind of unlearn some of those things. And God, I hope that that 7-year-old and that my daughter never have to go through the unlearning of that, because they never learn it to begin with. Mm-hmm. I mean, oh my God, I don't ever want to hear my daughter thinking twice about the way she looks, ever.
Like, or I just don't. She eats.
Or the way she eats, or anything like that. And I think as a practitioner of nutrition, I am so heightenedly aware of how food works in the body, and also the messaging of diet culture at the same time, that I feel so heightenedly aware of it, that's something that I'm really conscious of, and I'm going to have to be really conscious of going forward. Because to say that I don't still have biases is a lie to myself and to other people. They're still there, and I'm still deconstructing them on my own for myself. And it was funny, just the other day, I was changing her diaper, and she has like the, and it was so funny. So I'm changing her diaper, and there's like little cellulite on her little thighs. And I'm like, oh, it's so cute, I want to bite it. And I'm like, when did cellulite stop being cute? Because I look at it in the mirror, and I'm like, girl, you need to do some squats. Like that. And I'm starting to like realize, and in that moment, it was really beautiful for me to see in myself and say, it's not cute. It's still cute. You know, like it's still cute. And she's adorable for having it. And I'm still adorable for having it. And it doesn't change anything. You know, like, I think that was kind of like a fun moment for me to kind of see that and be like, oh, it's so cute, I want to bite it. And like, okay, maybe I want to bite my thighs too. Like,
yeah, good luck getting down there, but.
I know, that's the thing. It's like, I can't bend down. But you get the idea. It's like, and I thought to myself, at what point in my life did it stop being cute? Or was I told that it wasn't cute anymore?
Yeah, where did it come from?
I think it came from dance, but that's a whole topic.
Yes. And swimming. Body conscious sports and the media. Swimming. And everything.
Yeah. Because it didn't come from my mother. I'll tell you that much. I'm lucky in that. But it's really, really interesting. I was thinking about, like, man, when was I told that that was no longer cute? And when can I make sure that I continue? At that point, when it would hit her, when do I dig in deeper on telling her how cute it is? You know?
Yeah.
I think that's
important. Yeah. I might know the answer to this question already, but I ask this to all of my guests. So what is a book that has been very influential in your life or your business recently?
Oh, well, it's not a recent read. I think you know what I'm going to say. It's not a recent read, but it's one that I continue to go back to over and over again. And it's become foundational in myself and in the work that I do with my clients. And it's Brené Brown's The Gifts of Imperfection. Like, that book, in fact, I was having a conversation with a client of mine, the same client that I was talking about earlier, about how, like, she's like, what do I do next? She's currently reading Daring Greatly. And she's like, oh, I love Brene Brown. And I actually told her, I said, put Daring Greatly down. Stop that right now. Read The Gifts of Imperfection first, because I think you'll get more out of Daring Greatly after having read The Gifts of Imperfection. That book and her research, Brené, if you're hearing this now, I love you. And her research was so came into my life at such an awesome like junction period in my life where I really needed it. And I had done so much work on myself personally, but then I never put it towards my relationship with food. I was doing all this stuff kind of like outside of here because of like just, relationships and what have you. But her book, you think that it's about building a relationship with yourself and music and everything too, but God, there's so much that can be applied to your relationship with food all at the same time. And so, yeah, that book literally changed my life. I love that book. And to be honest, I don't know if I've ever sat down and read it all like straight through. I've like picked it up and put it down. And if you read it, it's like highlighted and starred, and notes are written on there. And I have like post-it notes coming out of it and all kinds of stuff because it's that type of writing. And so if you haven't read it or listened to it on Audible, stop what you're doing.
Move it to the top of your list.
Move it to the top of your list, because especially if you have this type of pattern, and especially if you're trying to kind of get out of this combative relationship with your body. It's so incredibly awesome, and it changed the way that I look at everything. So yeah, that's my book.
And then tell people where they can find you, which might be easier in a month or two when we release what we've been working on. However, tell
I'm not
people where they
gonna.
can find you now.
Okay. Right now, you can find me on Instagram as Christina Hoyt Nutrition, and it's CristinaHoyt Nutrition. I'm changing my business name. It was Nourish, Mindful Body, Mindful Life, and it's moving over just to Christina Hoyt. So, but that's where I have my party, and that's where I share my message. And the majority of my message is all about body loving, non-diet, health at every size, chatter, and inspirational nuggets. That's where you can find
I hope I didn't just blow people's ears off with my laughter at that.
me. It's okay, I cackle too.
Oh my
Ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka.
God. Well, guys, Christina will be back multiple times, like many, many, many times on the podcast. So you can look forward to hearing more from her and me soon.
Thank you, Dana, for having me.
Thanks for listening to Real Talk with Dana. If you enjoyed the episode, please share it with your family and friends and share the love by throwing us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, which will help spread the word and do a small part to correct all of the fitness and nutrition misinformation or bullshit that's out there, which is only causing people to become more unhealthy. Come find me anywhere at Real Food with Dana on Instagram and Facebook. Join the Real Talk with Dana Facebook group for more support and discussion on these episodes, and come hang out over on realfoodwithdana.com for the show notes and totally epic and delicious recipes.